to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Anna Page. And we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West.
This is a great honor for me, having three of the Montana Poet Laureates in the studio here at Yellowstone Public Radio. We have former Poet Laureate Tammy Holland, who is standing in for Anna Page as my co-host. Tammy, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Corby.
And we have the two current, is it Poets Laureate or Poet Laureate?
Poets Laureate.
Oh, poet.
Just like attorneys general.
So let me introduce the two Poets Laureates. Mandy Smoker, she is Fort Peck Assiniboine and Sioux, and she's the author of the book of poetry, Another Attempt at Rescue. She's been a lifelong educator and an advocate for Indian education, and currently she works for the nonprofit organization Education Northwest, travels all over the state and the region. And
Melissa is the author of 6 books of poetry, most recently Where Outside the Body is the Soul Today, and Pictograph, and a collection of essays on the poetic image called Earth Recitals, Essays on Image and Vision. Along with M.L. Smoker, she edited an anthology of poems in defense of global human rights entitled I Go to the Ruined Place, as well as Toward the Open Field, Poets on the Art of Poetry. Kwasny has taught poetry writing in graduate and undergraduate programs and in public schools for over 30 years.
Welcome to the studio. So the first thing I have to ask, is this not the first time we've had poets, laureates, that it's a shared position?
It's actually poets, laureate. Yes, it is. We wanted to work together. It's an unusual way to do this. We wanted to collaborate, and we're thankful that Governor Bullock decided to support our idea. The Poet Laureate position is a position that the state legislature created in 2005. It comes with no money. It's a public service position to honor poetry in the community and the state, to introduce Montana poetry to local audiences, and to advocate.
Tammy, do you have any tips for them? They've just started this career move.
Oh, my. Well, of course, Humanities Montana supports the travel and the, otherwise it would be impossible. But yes, I think you make a lot of miles, and you end up greeting people in all kinds of communities, serving all kinds of roles. I remember going to a county fair. Radio interviews, working with children. I mean, really, it's a delightful time. You get to meet so many people in Montana.
And do you get to decide on a project, per se, that you want to? I mean, do you say, oh, gosh, I'd really like to work with grade school kids, or I mostly want to work with older adults? Is there a theme or a project that you get to pick?
I think several of the poets in the past that have held the position have had different points of emphasis or different ways they wanted to approach the position. So certainly you can, kind of decide for yourself and for ourselves what we would like to focus on and what we're most interested in sharing about poetry.
I would love to hear more. I know you've been sharing some poems on Facebook, and I'm wondering how you're feeling about this idea of bringing poetic voices forward.
Okay, one thing that Mandy and I have agreed on as an emphasis for us in our collaboration is to find poems that give people hope, especially young people now, to find poems that are diverse and reflect the diversity not only of our state, but of our country. poems that might be less well-known outside the canon. We both are from marginalized communities, so we want to support those communities and those voices and just use poetry to bridge the gaps between people, the differences that we have, or the perceived differences that we have. And as poets, for a good part of our adult lives, we know that poetry can do that, that it's a phenomenal tool because it's the language of people's inner lives, and we all have one. And that's the world of feelings, the world of the imagination, the world of intuition and hopes and dreams. And everybody has those. And so the poetry offers a language for that, helps us to speak to one another in a more profound way.
I think, too, it carries a lot of weight with us because knowing that the ability to share diverse perspectives isn't always easy work. And I think poetry provides a vehicle to do that, to tell story, to express feeling and emotion across groups, but also knowing that it comes from a very specific place for Melissa and I. And to know, too, that, you know, across Montana and across the country, people don't always want to hear those voices. And sometimes they're silenced or eliminated, rendered invisible, I think, in this country. And so having the opportunity to kind of step out into that space with that awareness is really significant.
Have you found, and I would ask Tammy this too, I'm just wondering, with such a focus on sort of science and math in schools, if things like poetry, art, and music are being diminished in the education systems in Montana?
You know, we live in an age of budget cuts as well, and so I think often, STEM subjects are seen as leading to valuable careers. But I think there's also a kind of counterforce, which is that people talk about STEAM or science, technology, engineering, arts. And so there is that trend. I think more and more the research is showing that humanities and arts actually help people, you know, integrate the things that happen in their lives, understand themselves better, help them as they grow to make decisions, for example. So, yes, budget cuts have caused a decrease in these things, and there is, I think, a growing awareness that we need these subjects.
And there are ways to integrate the arts across content areas. We've become very siloed in mainstream education. You know, English exists here, math exists here, family and consumer science exists here. But there are ways that you can incorporate lots of different mediums into all of that coursework, and even do things like team teach, provide more experiential learning opportunities, just ripe with possibility there.
I know statistically Montana actually has a really high percentage of people that make a living as writers and artists in the state. I mean, very high percentage. You know, we're really spread out, a huge state and a lot of rural communities, but it has been a career move for people that live here.
You could get into a conversation, I think, about whether the landscape, whether the place, the community inspires those things.
Another way to think about poetry and the arts in the schools is not necessarily as a career move. That's how we've gotten
right
into the emphasis on STEM. And that is all good and well. But in that, we see people as instruments and instruments of the economy, for instance. The arts remind us that people are people, and remind the people making it and the people responding to it. And how can we let go of that? But also I want to say that in my many years of teaching in the schools from K through graduate school, I've often found that the students who were not necessarily doing well academically often excel at poetry. That becomes a field of success for them. And it's the teachers are amazed. I'm always amazed. But it opens up an avenue that we have closed down for students to excel. I think that may be true in all the arts, but it's certainly true in my experience with poetry.
So there are no SAT answers or questions?
Exactly,
about
and I think that's why people are afraid of teaching it, because you can't do a multiple choice test quiz for students. How do you judge creativity?
I've had people ask me, well, how should I be grading these poems when they come in? And I think I've suggested not grading them. You know, I've suggested, you know, letting the student compile them and make them into a book. There's so many things you can do that have a kind of end result, which is often the purpose of teaching, that don't involve so much judgment.
Right.
Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes about that is Gertrude Stein saying, artists need worship, not criticism. And I think, why not praise students?
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't we all do better if we have that freedom to experiment and explore without somebody saying, oh, I'm sorry, that's C work.
Probably 99% of us do better.
Yeah.
Mandy, you were talking about being from an indigenous culture and in Montana, the importance of your language. Can you tell us a little bit about that in terms of preserving the language?
There are really tremendous efforts across the state and country to revitalize and really save many indigenous languages. There's only a few that are still fluently spoken around the country. And all of that effort is so worthy and necessary. And I think that through creative writing, we can enhance that and support that. For me personally, I rely upon an elder or relative usually to make that translation, unless it's a certain vocabulary word I happen to be familiar with. So helping students tap into that part of their identity through poetry is exciting.
The reason I asked that, I was thinking about oral history and Homer, and I mean, it goes way back that really some of our greatest stories, our greatest histories, were in a poetic form. And I'm just wondering what it would be like to teach without a pencil and get kids to just, you know, sing their story or tell their story without having to focus so much on paper and words.
That's a wonderful idea. With younger students, most of us, when we work with younger students or struggling students, when we write poetry, often we do that. We ask them to say the poem, say the line, start the line, and then be the scribe for them. Mostly because we want a record of it, and that's why we have writing to begin with. But poetry is song-like. It's different from what we call speech as commerce. I use my speech to get what I want from you. It's very different. It's song-like. It's magic speech.
So I teach public speaking, and I encourage all my students, whether they do it or not, say it out loud. I mean, don't just write it out or take notes. Hear your voice saying the speech, because one, it builds some confidence when you're doing it again. And somehow the human voice has a power that lifts off the page. So that is my lead-in to asking each of you to read a poem that rises off the page, and we want to hear your voices.
I, traveling around Montana a lot for so many years and seeing varying landscapes at often different times of the year has been really formidable for me. Had a wonderful chance to spend several years going up to Blackfeet country multiple times. Very, very different from where I come from. The Rocky Mountain front there, what the Blackfeet call the backbone of the world, is how could you not be moved by that scene? And so I was thinking about that place, but also my home. I feel like I'm in all my work, I'm always, there's a reflection of home in there somewhere. So this is called Heart Butte, Montana. The unsympathetic wind, how she has evaded me for years now, leaving a guileless shell and no way to navigate. Once, when I stood on a plateau of earth, just at the moment before the dangerous jutting peaks converged upon the lilting sway of grasslands, I almost found a way back. There, the sky, quite possibly all the elements, caused the rock and soil and vegetation to congregate. Their prayer was not new, and so faint I could hardly discern. Simple remembrances, like a tiny syncopated chorus calling everyone home across 1,000 eastward miles, and what little wind was left at my back. But I could not move, and then the music was gone. All that was left were the springtime faces of mountains, gazing down, their last patches of snow luminous. I dreamed of becoming snowmelt, gliding down the slope and into the valley, with the promise and assurance that there is always a way to become bird, tree, water again.
Thank you, Mandy. That felt like Montana. Not only in the words, but the pace and the rhythm of it, I think.
I think it's hard to capture the sense of the landscape in language, and you do a beautiful job of that.
Thank you. It has that mystery of Heart Butte, of that backbone of the world country in it.
And Melissa, you have a poem for us?
I do. I'm going to tell a little story before I start the poem, and this poem is called Counting the Senses, and it's from my fifth book. The book before that was called The Nine Senses, and as writers, we always are told, use your senses, use your five senses. That's how you make something vivid for others, and we all know the five senses. Well, I was reading this book about Sufi thought and poetry, and it said the Sufis had nine senses. And so they named the other four, which were ones like clairvoyance and things, powers that we don't ordinarily think of. But as I went around reading from that book, people invariably came up to me and said, oh, but you forgot this sense. And they would tell me another sense besides the nine, or they'd say, and I just kept collecting all these ideas of ways to sense the world. So this poem came out of that, Counting the Senses. To sense the dead around us in places where they are attached, or to sense past lives within the present one. To sense the presence of birds or animals on the roadside in the dark, or the moods of birds or animals, let alone people. There are tribes who can orient even in the fog, naming the direction east or west that they are facing. There is the ability to see through lies, to feel an enemy at your back, to detect poison without taste, to douse for water. You were up before dawn, walking the shore, picking up broken bits of plastic and shell. To sense in ever-refined levels the dissipating cloud layers of oneself, what Ezra Pound named an aristocracy of emotion. In the spruce copse near the confluence, you left your hair. Last night we played Scrabble, My first word was divine. You added an S to it, doubling your score. In this very room, 14 years ago, you turned over and found the lump. Your hand rose to it as if guided by a sense of love.
There's a lot more going on in that story.
Yes. Poems usually start in one direction, and as Richard Hugo said, that's just the triggering town to go to a whole other place.
Tammy, do you have a poem you would like to share with our audience?
Sure. I'm just going to read kind of a light poem called Every Morning the Squirrel Comes. Along the ledge of the back fence, around the corner, onto the small branches of the sick elm, from the elm to the poplar, across scraggy bark, it makes its daily heroic leap into the fine stems of the maple, and there feasts on leftover spinners from fall, each seed curled with potential. It's the wild leap I love, the branches quaking like a bobblehead, snow or leaves flying in season, and the happy squirrel bounding along to solid trunk and then up the next rung to light branches nearer the sky, sometimes circling or chasing in dappled sun. In summer, it splays along the central trunk to cool, and then, as if leaping tree to tree were everything, it takes its flight. Easy for a squirrel, no concern for a slip that might send it breaknecking down or into the mouth of the neighbor's cat who waits in the shrubs, twitching its full tail. Every day a leap, and then another, as if falling could not be further from its mind.
I have that same squirrel.
I know.
In my yard.
I know. They're little clones everywhere, aren't they?
Whenever I teach poetry to young students, I just try to remind them they're still developing their sense of self and identity and perspective of the world, that what you see and the way you interpret it and encounter it and live amongst it is unique from anybody else. And so the way that I might describe the light coming in the window right now from where I sit in my age and my selfhood is entirely different from you as a fourth grader who might get to run out there and play in the playground in 15 minutes, right? So we have, and how valuable that is and how necessary it is, and that poetry gives you a vehicle to share something uniquely you and to be as descriptive as possible. Because the perspective that you bring to it is like no one else's has ever been.
When I used to teach in the schools in San Francisco with younger students, we would do poems about the seasons. And every winter there would be snowmen in the seasons and in their poems and all the things that you don't have in San Francisco in the winter. And or they would say something like, oh, the song of the hummingbird. And you go, the hummingbird does not have a pretty sound. It's bzzz. And so it took a while to get them to trust their own, as you say, trust their responses to things, trust their own uniqueness, their own way of responding, their own imaginations.
And through that, I think it's so exciting then that each individual finds in themselves this ability to express who they are, which I think is such a fundamental human right.
And they just need permission.
Yes, yeah.
Let me ask, what are your aspirations with all the money that you're not getting and all the travel that you are doing and the miles you're putting in? What are your aspirations for the next couple of years?
Well, we just love collaborating. We love talking with one another and building ideas, trying to make connections. And so we just look forward to traveling to places we may have been before, but never in this sort of capacity. Sitting down in communities, I can just imagine like being in a small town library or county museum, you know, on a snowy evening, in a group of, 20 to 30, hopefully, people wander in, and we share, we're going to carefully craft the poetry selections that we make. We'd also like, if there happen to be local poets, to give them an opportunity to be showcased, to share some of our own work, that of others, in a way that might resonate with particular communities. And then hopefully building some bridges in that way, connecting initially, and then again sharing a bit more of our diverse experiences in places that might not know people like us.
I think about students in Montana, young people in Montana. We've talked a lot about the high suicide rate for young people in Montana, which is consistently in the top 1 to 3 in the country. And in the research that we have looked at, most of that comes from a sense of feeling less than, feeling that you're different. For instance, LGBTQ youth are 3 to 4 times more likely to commit suicide than the rest of the population. American Indian students, that's a high percentage for them also. Why is that? We want to be, in our small way, a force for good in that way, by showing people that there isn't, that those differences don't matter. That people should be empowered by their differences and by their lives, their interior lives.
And the differences really can be celebrated.
Right, absolutely. And you can do that by, again, giving permission. Most of us grew up hearing poems only from one point of view, what we call the canon. If we expand the canon... When I was growing up, I didn't think anyone was a poet except they had to be dead. They had to be dead maybe a couple hundred years. They had to be from England. It changes things when you know that the world is bigger than you thought it was.
So you have a road ahead of you. It's a big state. And I would like to offer both congratulations for being poets laureate. And I'm thankful for Steve Bullock to being wise enough to select Melissa Quasney and Mandy Smoker.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Thanks.
Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains is produced by Corby Skinner, Anna Page, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Naumann. Additional funding provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. More information on Resounds is available at ybradio.org.